Today, the bank that could save Australia. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Robbie Barwick. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, Martin.
How are you going?
Oh, well, this is my social distance setting. Been spending a lot of time here.
I know, it does get a bit like that. We've had to make some changes here in the studio simply because of the fact that things have to be a bit different. But anyway, we still carry on, you know.
Yeah, it's not too bad. And behind those blinds there is a golf course. So I can look out there and pretend I'm not trapped in a big city.
Excellent. Well, that's always good. Now, we've got a very important conversation today because obviously where we are at the moment with the economic slowdown and the virus, all those things, there's a very important conversation to be had about what happens next.
Yep.
And as I think we've touched on before, just going back to the same old ain't going to work. So we need to find some different thoughts and approaches to be able to actually lay the foundations for a different economic basis going forward.
Well, the same old, I would argue, got us into this mess. There's a discussion that's raging about the trade-off between health and the economy at the moment, right? And the problem is, I think it's completely misunderstood because the economy, there is no trade-off. The economy is what meets our needs. Our needs at this time are public health measures, right? Now, I know there's some skeptics about that, but put that skepticism aside. You know, there are such things, no one can deny there are such things as pandemics, however serious you think this particular one and the reaction, there are such things as pandemics. And if we've got an economy that's great until there's a pandemic, there's something wrong with that economy, right? Because our needs at this moment are public health measures. It's the economy that's supposed to meet that. How's the economy organized? So there's assumptions there that allow you to look back and realize, okay, something went awry. I think we're sort of crossing a boundary condition at the moment though, where thanks to the success that we've had by the official figures in at least containing the pandemic, and they're looking good. Thanks to that success, the economic reality is fast becoming the emergency. You know, I would have said a month ago the health emergency was the emergency. Now the economic reality is fast becoming the emergency. We actually have to start addressing that. We've got a grave unemployment crisis brewing. I've had some feedback from people in the know that there's a real fear that people's consumption behavior will change on the back of this, and therefore a lot of the practices that people had of, you know, not worrying too much about running up the credit card in order to eat out at that restaurant or do that particular thing, all which comes under the categories of luxuries, which were part of the fueled the service economy that employed a lot of people, that's not necessarily going to come roaring back. And after the $1,500 supplement of wages is gone in September, you know, there's a real worry there. So we're saying, okay, now's the time to get serious, be planning that, let's intervene in that situation now, but not in a not thought of as a reaction to this where we're at right now, but thought of as a reaction to the decades of policies that got us into this mess in the first place. We should be doing now what we should have done all along. And that's why we're strongly advocating a national investment bank. And what I want to discuss here is our specific plan that I've been in discussion with a lot of members of parliament about in the last few weeks. And some of them are getting quite excited about this as a concrete way that we can actually turn this around.
Right. And the critical point to observe is that the banking system has pumped up mortgages, and you know, they've got more mortgage lending than anything else. and they've actually been very slow at supporting investment for real businesses and real momentum in the economy. That's really the fundamental issue. And so the point there is that if you just simply allow this opportunity to pass and go back to where we were, we're just going to end up with bigger house prices, more mortgages, and no real economy. And it's the real economy that creates the value that sustains the rest of what we do.
So let's put up on the screen the image that I've sent you, which is I'm grateful to my friend Dr. Wilson Tsai for producing this image, because what it shows is pretty dramatic. The way I describe it is, this is how the private banks turned the economy upside down, right? So 1990, they're lending 70% to business, just over 20% to housing. That's completely reversed, right? 60% to mortgages, barely 30% to business. And what is business? Business are the ones that employ us to be able to afford mortgages, for crying out loud, right? What were the banks thinking? But there's a larger point here. That happened in a period where there were only private banks. There was no public option. We privatized the Commonwealth Bank in 1996. This was our economy. This is Wilson Tsai's argument. Our economy as it exists right now is a product of the profit-motivated lending decisions of private banks. The government vacated the field. Right. No direction whatsoever. They have influenced certain things through direct spending, but the power of credit is how things really move in an economy, right? No influence whatsoever. The private banks have given us this economy, which is a services economy, heavily over dependent on housing, right, on this housing bubble. And, we're at this point where the real businesses that create the wealth, that employ people, have been starved of credit. That's where we were at the time this has actually hit. I just want to point out that when we sold the Commonwealth Bank in 1996, the final dollar figure for that privatization was $7.8 billion. In the following 20 years, because we put out a press release about this in 2017. In the following 20 years, that bank's profits was over $100 billion, right? And we let it go. Now, if we had kept it in public hands, the Commonwealth wouldn't have made $100 billion in profit. That's not the point. The bank wouldn't have been making those profits. The economy would have been making more of those profits, right? The bank didn't exist to make those kind of big profits. If we turned into this private thing where, along with the other banks, we're able to just become these profit-making machines extracting wealth out of the economy, right?
Well, actually, more specifically, extracting wealth out of households. Because if you actually look at the margins on Australian banks and compare them with others around the world, they're a lot higher. And in fact, if you look at the fees and if you look at the interest rates that households in Australia have been paying for the last 20 years, they're way higher than they should have been, because the banks have been actually milking consumers and essentially making excess profits.
Yeah, for sure. They had nothing to stop them from doing that, right? But the final the result is what's in that chart that Dr. Wilson Tsai produced.
And sorry, Robbie, one other point. It's worth also just reflecting on this, that half of the economy, the GDP, is household consumption, right?
Yeah.
Household consumption is driven by, guess what? More debt.
Yes.
And that's essentially money being created by taking bigger mortgages and doing second mortgages, plus the credit card debt and everything else, right? So we have a debt-fueled, consumer-fueled economy, rather than actually an economy which is investing and generating real value by way of proper businesses creating real things that can actually put value back into the economy. So the contribution to GDP from business now relative to where it was 20 years ago is also reversed.
Yes. Well, so that's the next thing, and the other sort of chart I wanted to highlight. We should be able to find a graph for this, but the decline in manufacturing over this same period. So at its height, Martin, manufacturing was over 30% of the Australian economy in the glory days of the 60s. But even at the time Bob Hawke and Paul Keating came to power in 83, it was almost 20% of the economy, right? In that period, it's gone from close to 20% now down to 6%. And that's the economy that makes the wealth. Agriculture also produces wealth, of course. It's productive, but that hasn't gone anywhere as a percentage of the economy. In fact, it's slightly declined. But it's the decline in manufacturing that's been the real issue. All these imports coming in from China and Asia and other cheap countries, Bangladesh, etc., right? Textile clothing and footwear, Indonesia, you know, displaced domestic manufacturing in Australia. Looked good for, you know, they it was very effective in making inflation look low because you've got all this cheap stuff coming in. But the national debt soared on the back of it because we tried to maintain a living standard in a period, the 30-year period, where we weren't manufacturing for ourselves anymore, weren't producing for ourselves, or weren't producing much, were earning through raw materials exports. And we couldn't pay for that living standard ourselves. We weren't paying our own way. We borrowed it, right? And our national debt soared on the back of that. Household debt soared on the back of that. So those things were true about the economy before COVID-19 happened, right? And so our argument is COVID-19 has been the wind that's come along and blown the economy over, but any number of things would have been the same.
Absolutely.
Another financial crisis, right? Global financial crisis, bang. A war, God help us, right? Bang, right? Our vulnerability was structurally in place already, and that's what we need to address. So what do we need? We advocate a national investment bank, right? You can't leave it up to the private sector. The private banks help get us into this mess. Don't expect them to turn it around. And in fact, Scott Morrison had to pull rank on him this week because they can't even rely upon to help to lend a small business to get them over the month they need before the $1,500 kicks in, right? Yep. So forget about that. What we need is what we should have had all along, what we would have had if we hadn't privatized it, the public bank option to start investing here. Now, the rot began in our financial system, in our economy, in 1981 when the first financial system inquiry produced what was called the Campbell Report, right? And in that report, which was so radical, Malcolm Fraser, the Liberal Prime Minister at the time, wouldn't implement it. Bob Hawke and Paul Keating came in and dressed it up as something else and implemented it. But that report demanded the privatisation of all public banks, state banks, Commonwealth Bank, Commonwealth Development Bank, the whole lot. We've got to get now. Why? They used all sorts of jargon that people fall for, right? You know, government shouldn't be picking winners. It's inefficient, right? That it's an inefficient allocation of resources. All this kind of rubbish. None of it was true. One reason: private banks hate competing with public options. They can't stand it, right? We took the public competition away. Look what they've done. So purely ideological. Let's reverse that. Problem is, we actually do it. We have a situation where we've got a health crisis, which has restricted a lot of normal function of the economy. Parliament's barely meeting. We have an economic crisis that does require immediate intervention now. We don't have time to legislate one, right? Legislate a national investment bank. So what can you do? Well, it turns out, and I've mentioned this when we discussed this before, we do have this one thing in Australia called the Clean Energy Finance Corporation. And it's a legacy of Julia Gillard and the Greens in 2012, where in order to address climate change, they legislated what was then and still is the only public banking institution in the country, right? Because they wouldn't have got it up with any other excuse. Because Labor buys into this neoliberal claptrap too, but to match the urgency they said about climate change, we need this kind of institution. Now, it's very small. It's a $10 billion lending facility by the federal government called the Clean Energy Finance Corporation. But nevertheless, it's a federal government lending facility into the economy, right? That's all you need. So we looked at it. We've gone through the details of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, the legislation. It has enabling legislation, and also has, as we discovered with the cash ban, you have the way they like doing these things. Now you have a regulation that's more flexible, which bad for the cash ban actually turns out to be pretty good for this institution, because so the legislation basically empowers it to make investments into clean energy technology and related things. The investment mandate allows the government to very flexibly, redirect that, like, or emphasize certain things over others, etc. Right? There's by its existing records, you can tell the Clean Energy Finance Corporation has already been able to interpret its powers rather broadly, right? So, even if it's supposed to invest in clean energy, there's a lot of related things that it's found a way to invest in, and that even includes gas power generation from coal mining in Moranbah in Queensland, with a gas byproduct, turn that into power, right? Which, is only cleaner, not actually clean, but nevertheless it still qualifies. They were able to do that. Waste management systems, etc. Right? So it's shown it's flexible, and that showed us, well, this won't take much in the way of changes, adjustments to get it going again, right? To get it, not when I say going again, it's already going. I mean, to get it up to speed for what it needs to be used for now. So what we've produced a bunch of amendments. When I say a bunch, a relatively small number of amendments that can be made to the legislation to turn this small bank, small institution into a flexible but powerful national investment bank that Australia needs right now, that could be making investments in all sorts of things right around Australia to get people into jobs, right? So the changes that are needed are quite simple. One, we need to expand the powers of the CEFC so it can invest in more than just clean energy, just invest in energy, in industry and infrastructure generally, right? You could perhaps have got around it by making sure every bit of infrastructure you built had a token solar panel on it. But I mean, that in an emergency, it's extraordinary what governments can do if they want to, right? They figure out a way to do it. So, but anyway, let's just expand its powers to do that. I just want to read it to you. I have to change my view here. But so the current object of the Act is, the object of this Act is to establish the Clean Energy Finance Corporation to facilitate increased flows of finance into the clean energy sector. And then we have proposed an amendment that adds this wording, and such further sectors of the Australian economy in which public and private enterprise are engaged in the production and transportation of tangible economic wealth, including manufacturing, agriculture, construction, mining, public utilities and transportation, and the financing of nationwide infrastructure projects in water, high-speed rail, and energy, among other vital aspects of the economy, to increase Australia's physical economic productivity and therefore the standard of living of all Australians. And if you put that wording in there, and you don't just do it in one place, you do it in a few places, but that's enough to allow the management of this institution to interpret their powers broadly enough, they can just provide the money, right? The second thing that needs to be done is $10 billion in capital is not enough, right? There needs to be a lot more than that. But when I say a lot more, nothing compared to the $320 billion that we've just borrowed to spend, right? That's crazy. So if the other change needs to be made, that the government guarantees the CEFC's debts, so that the Commonwealth guarantees its debts, that allows the CEFC to issue the equivalent of infrastructure bonds, and those, you could issue them to Australian superannuation funds. They would jump at them, right? They're that kind of long-term guaranteed investment. That's the point when the government guarantees it. We're saying if you issued, say, $40 billion in infrastructure bonds to super funds, and you increase the capital of this institution to $50 billion, and then just let it operate as a bank, and at a conservative lending ratio, that would be up to $500 billion that it can provide in credit for projects and industry ideas that are really important right now. right? And the only other change that we suggest, we've taken the existing investment mandate that's in this regulation and revised it to be consistent with what we're proposing this institution do. And the only other, the main change in there is to remove, currently the poor CEFC operates with a bit of a restriction on it, where it has to ensure that its investments are purely commercial and return 3 to 4% above the bond rate. Now, when it comes to infrastructure, that's inappropriate, right? Sometimes an infrastructure project like a bridge, you stick a toll on it, it'll make money. But infrastructure that's nation-building infrastructure that increases productivity, you don't need to care that the actual project makes money, like the Macquarie Bank model, which is just about using infrastructure to extract wealth from people. You care that that increases productivity so that the economy makes money, right? The economy makes wealth, produces wealth. And that productivity will allow, you know, whoever, the borrower to pay it back, right? So those are the changes. We've drafted them. We announced them. We put out a release yesterday that people can find on our website about this. Look through the changes. If you support this idea, right, and the intention that we're talking about, get involved. As you know, Martin, we're not here just to discuss, good ideas versus bad ideas. We want to act on them. I can tell you now, I'm having a lot of conversations with members of Parliament at the moment. I took a call yesterday when I had ventured out to brave the pandemic with my mask on and gloves, and I was in IGA supermarket getting shopping, and I get a call from a senator. When they call you, you don't not take the call. And I'm going up and down the aisles having a discussion with this senator, and he was really fired up about the possibility here. This is going to become a very intense debate in the Parliament. There's already a major turnaround in the rhetoric, at least, on the economy, right? Nobody is arguing at the moment that we need more manufacturing, that we don't need more manufacturing. Everyone accepts that, right? At least that fight at a minimum has been conceded, right? Now you've got to make sure that gets followed through on. There's still some bad rhetoric there, though. Let me point out, they still use, there's people are still saying, oh, we shouldn't be picking winners and, that sort of stuff. I mean, those are the arguments they used for us for 30 years, and we all sort of swallowed them. Well, if government shouldn't be picking winners, let me say this, government shouldn't be picking losers for sure. And that's what they did. They made the economy, they picked losers. But as other people pointed out to me, they use rhetoric like that, and it's always a lie, because no, they picked winners. They picked the banks. They picked the big mining companies. They were the winners in these changes they made to the economy. It was households that were the losers. It was industry, real industry, that was the losers, right? So don't accept any of that BS anymore, right? We see now quite clearly the flaws in the economy, the structural flaws in the economy. We can address that by not inventing some new outlandish idea and just give it a try. Go back to what worked. And a public credit institution that can provide the long-term credit for industries and for infrastructure that private banks will not do, or will only do in the Macquarie Bank model, where it has to have a massive toll on it, a massive cost, so that they can have a profit out of it, an unreasonable profit. That kind of old thinking won't help us through this crisis, right? We can get a lot of our economy going quite fast. Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 came to power. The crash had happened in 29. By 33, the depression was very, very deep, huge unemployment, etc. He wanted to make sure jobs could get started very quickly. He embarked on a series of nation-building projects, and some were really, really impressive, like the Tennessee Valley Authority. Problem was, he had ideological opposition to what he wanted to do. He knew Congress wouldn't fund the projects one at a time, yet they had this bank there. They called it the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, that set up to finance, to come up with ways to bail out banks and railroads. It hadn't done that very well. So he said, let's turn it, let's use that. That was capitalized, that had capital of 500 million. In the next 20 years, it lent out 50 billion into projects that transform the United States, right? Take the existing institutions, adapt them for the time we need and get them going. So that's the plan. Get behind us, please. What I ask people to do is get on our website, get the release, send it to your members of parliament, send it to your state member. All levels of government are involved in this. This is a serious thing. All levels, member of parliament, state member of parliament, local councillors, share it with them. If you haven't signed our petition, I'll give you the link again, Martin. If you haven't signed our National Bank petition, please sign it and share it, right, as well. And doing those things, getting the message out now, and I mean now, like urgently in these weeks, because there is supposed to be a sitting of Parliament in May, and it's going to be a trial sitting for a week. If they we actually have an opportunity here with how quickly things are changing and how quickly the minds of politicians are changing. This May sitting of Parliament, we might be able to make real progress on these amendments, right, and get something going, right? And that's going to come down to a lot of it's going to come to, you know, I'll make a lot of calls and have a lot of discussions, etc., but the power of the people getting behind it and making calls, you know, you sending the email, it's very, very valuable at a time like this. So please get involved. It'd be a big help.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, it's certainly a very important conversation to be had. And, you know, we have to do something differently because we just can't go on with the same old, same old. We know that's not going to work. And because it's already there, it means that effectively the lead time is just so short relative to other options. So it makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Improvise. Yep. No need for massive inquiries and all this, you know, blah, blah. Yeah. Right? Yeah. That kind of thing has killed us.
The biggest danger, of course, is that the private banks will fall over backwards trying to stop it. So they will do absolutely everything in their power, because basically what we're doing is we are taking back what rightfully we should have always not given away in the first place.
Yep, that's the point. This is not a reaction to this crisis. This is a reaction to the thinking that got us into this crisis.
Yep.
And don't, and the banks, you know, if any politician's game to die in a ditch for the banks, well, they will die in a ditch. Right? That's the thing. The public is, you know, they want, you know, nobody deserved to lose their job over what happened, right? It's nobody's, the workers, it wasn't their fault that they found themselves in a services job that is the end result of silly decisions banks have made. That, you know, and there's totally legitimate jobs, but it was part of the structure of the economy that made us vulnerable to this. Let's not make those mistakes again, you know?
Yep, and absolutely. And the other point, Robbie, there is that if you think about how much money was given directly to the banks in the last month or 6 weeks to support the economy, in quotes, actually to support the banking system, right? What we're talking about here is a somewhat smaller quantum probably, but actually going directly into the economy to make the direct change to the way the economy works.
Well, and that's right. If that 90 billion had have gone into capitalizing this, right, we could be seeing, you know, lots of places in Australia with the pandemic have been nowhere near as bad as Sydney or Melbourne, and none of us are bad compared to the rest of the world. So they could have, Bob Catter, who one of the champions of this, he's definitely adopted this policy as his own. He said, look, we're COVID-19 free up here. We'll lock the border and let us start building these projects, right? Come up, you know, if you want to work, come up here and work on these projects, you know. Plenty of places in Australia. In fact, I would encourage people, contact the CEC if you live in a place in Australia where you know there's been a good infrastructure project that they should have built ages ago and never got anywhere because, you know, the government never funded it or whatever. Let us know about it, because that's exactly the sort of thing this bank could fund. If you're someone who's involved in a manufacturing industry and you've had an idea and the bloody banks just wouldn't, you know, give you a chance, right, but you know it has value, right, there are experts that the government's brought on board, and they're going to be helping the thinking through of this. But those are the sort of projects that this bank is there to give a go to, right? And come forward, let us know, and we'll help publicise them.
Great. Okay, Robbie. Well, thanks for your time today. We'll put all the links in the comments below as normal, and a great opportunity to make a difference. Fantastic.
Thanks, Martin.
Thank you. Have a great day. Cheers.
Cheers.